Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Hello and welcome. This is episode 317 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. I am Sean Penrod, your host. So glad that you are joining us today for another fantastic interview with a great Magic player. If you've been with us for a while, you know that we interview the best players in the world. The last two episodes, we have had return guests on the show, people who have done well before and they're continuing to do well. And, you know, we had them back on the show to kind of see, hey, what's up? What's it been like for you the last little bit? Today, we have a new guest, someone who has just popped up on our radar, and I can't wait to share his story with you. But before we do, I want to say thank you so much to Paragon City Games, who has supported the show this year and beyond. They've done the prize support for our monthly giveaway, as well as the prize support for our sealed league, and it's just been awesome being associated with them. So Paragon City Games, thank you so much for all you do. And proud of you, can check them out at ParagonCityGames.com. And of course, I want to say another huge thank you to you, the listeners. Like, we would not be doing this without you, right? I don't want to sit here and talk to a microphone and, you know, to myself, right? That's really boring. But because you are there, you're listening, you're learning, you're growing, you're loving Magic, that's why the show has gone on. So thank you so much for all your support through 2018. And it's just been a great year. And I had a blast connecting with players, connecting with you. And I'm just really, really grateful for all that you've done. So thank you for tuning in. I look forward to continuing to interact with you in the Facebook group. That's a great place to ask questions, talk about spoilers, and just, you know, interact with really decent, uplifting Magic players. That's what MTG Pro Tutor is all about, a place where you can learn no matter where you're at, where you can grow, no matter what skills you brought to the table, you're always able to take it to the next level. So thank you so much for being a prodigy, for listening, for being part of this amazing community. So thank you. Now, like I said, we have a great guest lined up here, and I look forward to bringing him in, sitting down, and talking about Magic. What's up, everybody? Our guest is a member of Team RIW from Farmington Hills, Michigan. He co-hosts the podcast Turn One Thoughtseize and has two Grand Prix Top 8s, a Pro Tour Top 16, and one Star City Games Top 8 in his record. He's a dedicated control player and Snapcaster Mage enthusiast. Come to us from Farmington Hills, Michigan. Prodigies near and far. Let's welcome the one, the only, Zach Allen. Zach, how you doing today?
Good, Sean. How you doing, man?
Fantastic. Thank you. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take the game to the next level?
Absolutely. Love to.
Excellent. Now, prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Zach, you can find him on Twitter at A22EN. And he also just started streaming. Is it the same username there on Twitch?
It's at A22ENMTG on Twitch.
Okay, excellent. And so there's for Twitter, there's Twitch. So if you want to connect with him, say thanks for being on the show, ask him a follow-on question, but that is how you can find him. So, Zach, let's hear a little bit about you outside of Magic before we do the whole Magic thing. Are you born and raised in Farmington Hills, Michigan?
I am, actually. Yep. Grew up in Michigan. Went to high school here. Went to college at Michigan State University. Graduated in 2012. And I've been working for, I worked for an insurance company for about a year after school, and then I've been working for a different one ever since. So, I work as an environmental insurance broker.
All right. So you work full time and then moonlight as a successful Magic player.
Yep. That's the life.
That's the life. Excellent. Very cool. So how did you get into games then? Have you been there, your entire life, whatnot? Tell us. Did you grow up in a gaming family, not necessarily Magic related, but did you play games growing up? Do you have any siblings or parents that play? Or
yeah, so I played Magic when I was like 10. I had a kid down the street from me that played too, so we played with each other, but I only played for about a year or two then. Quickly moved into competitive gaming with consoles like Xbox. Mm-hmm. Played a lot of Halo growing up, Call of Duty, those type of games. Went to college, didn't really game at all in college. And then when I graduated, I was looking for something to do, with my spare time that was competitive, that I could, really compete in. I was missing that itch from when I played Halo and Call of Duty back in high school. So stumbled across Magic and fell in love, and I've been playing it ever since.
Excellent. So you alluded to your introduction to the game. So take us back in time, back to when you were 10, and tell us that story. Do you remember the first time that you ever saw or played with Magic cards?
I actually do, yeah. My friend had an older brother who I think was in high school at the time, and his older brother had bought him just some cards, and he invited me over to play. And I think I was playing Pokemon cards at the time. Like I was, kind of into that. And he was like, hey, why don't we try Magic? And I remember they gave me like, they gave me this deck that was, I think it was pretty bad, but at the time it was a lot of fun. I had this, it was just a mono red burn deck with Raging Goblin and Lightning Bolt. Mm. And we played, and I remember his brother just destroying us with a Reanimator deck where he was just bringing back all these big monsters from the graveyard. And we were just sitting there like, yeah, I mean, we can't do anything. We're just going to lose to this thing.
That's so cool. So just with a friend up the street and a big brother got him into, got him some cards and you got in that way. That's so fun. Yep. So, and then you just kind of played casually for a bit then and fell out of it and came back after college.
Yep.
Awesome. So what was that first set that you came in on though, way back when you were 10, you remember?
I think Masks had just been released, but all of our cards were from Urza's Block when I first played.
That's really good. I mean, that's, yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah, actually, when I first came back, I went back and looked at like the small amount of cards I had, and there were some pretty pretty old ones in there. I had a couple were kind of valuable, but nothing crazy.
Do you have a favorite set?
Yeah, I think my favorite set personally is Khans of Tarkir. It's the first one I really delved in, and just I don't know, I love that set. It had a bunch of cards I liked. It was a really fun standard format. It got me into Modern too. I just love Khans.
Very cool. And I normally ask for a favorite card, but based on what you provided for the bio, I'm pretty sure it's Snapcaster Mage. Is that right?
Yeah, not even close.
Ah, cool.
Favorite card of all time.
Cool. So, I mean, for those of us who may not know, what is it? What does it do? And then tell us, why do you like it?
So Snapcaster Mage is a 2-mana, 2/1 human wizard with flash, a colorless and a blue. And it says, when it enters the battlefield, the target instant or sorcery card in your graveyard gains flashback, which means you basically just get to recast that card out of your graveyard. And I love the card because it doesn't look that good. You know, when you're newer, you look at it, it just kind of looks like a small creature, but it is just an incredibly, incredibly good card, very powerful. And then on top of that, it has just a lot of awesome like flavor implications to it, I guess, where it's actually an invitational card. Mm-hmm. So to me, it represents, you know, somebody hitting the peak of the game and being immortalized on a card, which is just this awesome extra flavor element that I just love about it. So, cool. Yeah, absolutely love that card.
Oh, man, that's cool. So when after college, when you said that you stumbled across Magic again, what was that like? How did you re-find it? How did you become reacquainted with Magic?
Yeah, actually, one of my friends, I was looking for something to do, but I wasn't specifically looking for gaming necessarily. One of my friends just called me up on a Sunday and said, hey, I used to play Magic. I think I remember you playing too. Do you want to play? And I was like, no, absolutely not. And he was like, oh, come on, man. And, you know, he talked me into it. I show up at his house. We play some games and he is just crushing me. He gave me like his bad deck. He was playing a good one. He's just smashing me. I'm kind of getting frustrated. So I was like, you know, I'm going to go grab my cards back from my house. See if I have any that make this better. Cause we didn't have like any, he just had like two decks. Mm-hmm. I went and like looked through mine and like found some of the old decks I had from back when I was playing with my friend and his brother. And I played against him with those and was still getting crushed. And I don't know, something about just like losing them repeatedly just made me really, really want to beat him. And, you know, from there, it was just a downward spiral of me just getting further and further into Magic, I guess. So, you know, went to my local store, got some cards, built some real decks and came back and started challenging him. And then started going to FNM and from there, obviously, now I'm on the Pro Tour.
Yeah,
so
keep on going. So at that point, when you started getting more serious about Magic, you know, you started going to FNM and then local events and what have you, what was an early challenge that you faced when you started getting into, you know, competitive Magic?
Well, so I didn't have like any super hardships, but one of my biggest challenges was every single FNM I would go to, there was this player at my store who won every single event. And no matter what I did, I just could never beat him. And, you know, when I was first going, I wasn't really beating anybody. You know, I'd go for a couple months and I was starting to beat, you know, more and more people, but I could just never beat this one player. And then, you know, fast forward 2 years and I'm still not able to beat this guy. This guy was awesome, by the way. He'd been on the Pro Tour a couple times and I never beat him, but I told him, you know, about 2 months in, I looked him in the eyes when we were playing one time. I said, I'm going to beat you. It may not be today, but I'm definitely going to beat you. And, Yeah, I still don't really ever beat him. He still just crushes me. Even at FNM now, he'll still beat me all the time. My record against him lifetime is really, really poor.
Really low.
But he turned into one of my best friends in Magic. So
that that early challenge, you know, of, you know, facing that best player in the store, you know, pretty much every game store will have, you know, that person, maybe to varying degrees of you know, skill or whatnot. But what did you learn from that experience, from, you know, constantly having this, you know, this challenge to look up to, this challenge in front of you? That, what did you learn from that experience that you can share with the Prodigies?
Well, one, it taught me that, like, this drive was really important for getting better, because mm-hmm. I had this extra motivation to, you know, always find a way to improve, always kind of, you know, get over the hardships of Magic, like a tilting loss and whatnot, and just, like, look at what was costing me games, what I did wrong, and try to find a way to improve. And then the other thing it taught me that, you know, maybe kind of wishy-washy, but it taught me that the friendship was kind of the most important, because still looking back, I'm still super grateful that that happened, just because he is one of my best friends now, you know?
That's cool. And so, I mean, Prodigies everywhere can have similar situations where they have this motivation in front of them, or, you know, this challenge in front of them that can motivate them, but then also, you know, it can develop into a Magic friendship that, you know, lasts years and, you know, help each other in through events and whatnot. And so that opportunity exists for pretty much anybody if they're willing to take it. So that's pretty cool. So as you started improving and going to, you know, more events and being more competitive, kind of take us, we're going to move through that journey, obviously, but what would you say has been your worst Magic moments? Is there a time that was really hard, or a near miss, or a tough loss, or something that that really stands out to you as a tough Magic time?
Yeah, I would say kind of when I was, you know, still coming up. This is at the time where the way to qualify for the Pro Tours was PPTQs, and they were still newer in the system. They've been out for maybe a year, but you know, the way to get to the Pro Tour from where I was to start winning PPTQs. And I remember that I was starting to put in all this extra time and play a lot, and I kept getting ninth. I got ninth at like 5 or 6 PPTQs, like in a row, honestly. And it was a heartbreaker. It felt like I was doing all this work. I wasn't getting anywhere. I was seeing absolutely no rewards from it. It felt really bad. So, you know, the moment where you finally win is awesome. And then I actually had a very similar experience with SCGs, where I got ninth place at 2 different SCGs in a row. And that was, it was kind of the same thing. So it's just like, oh man, just the ninth places feel, they feel good, but they feel horrible at the same time. It's like, you know, you put in all that work and you're so close, and then you like lose the last match of the day. That's like a winning in or something. And it just, oh man, it's heartbreaking.
What did you learn from that experience? Like you said, you're working, you're trying, you're going to events, obviously, and you keep coming at 9. So it's like, oh man, like I feel like I'm almost there, but I keep falling short. What did you learn from that you can share with us?
Well, one of my biggest takeaways from it is that the results of the tournament isn't indicative of your actual performance or your skill necessarily. Where it's like, you know, better players can finish below worse players and whatnot, and you may have played really well, and you know, your record may not show that just because you got unlucky with, you know, how the cards broke or whatnot. And really keeping that in perspective is important, because Magic is a game where the vast majority of people are going to lose through a tournament. Like, that's just how it works. Is there's one winner at the end and everybody else lost, right? So it is really hard to keep that in perspective sometimes, but it's really something that is important to do.
Do you have any suggestions on how we can? Because you're right, like the numbers pan out that way. I never really thought of it before. There's one winner and everyone else loses, as far as, you know, first place goes. But when we're in the moment, it's hard to be like, oh, you know, the results aren't indicative of my skill. So do you have any suggestions of how we can keep that in mind and not get, you know, bogged down in the moment?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the strategy I've always employed is, you know, you kind of know realistically where you're going to finish, right? Based on, you know, how the couple previous events have gone, or, you know, your preparation level, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if you're expecting to just day two and then you day two, that's awesome. Like, you succeeded even though you might not have won the event, right? So it's like, it's more just being realistic with what you think is going to happen, and then just kind of comparing to that. And then if you fall below that goal, you just got to keep your chin up, I guess. Just keep fighting through it, because it does happen. It happens to the best players. Like, I, you know, did well at the Pro Tour and then didn't day two at SCG this year, like the very next one I went to. So it's not, you know, it's not 100% correlation every single event.
Yeah. Cool. Now, every journey or every player's journey is full of ups and downs, and yours being no different. You just shared with us a down, but obviously the flip side would be our highs. So what has been your proudest Magic moment to date?
Definitely. It definitely has to be the Pro Tour performance I just had. That one was just, that one was unbelievable. I got put on this team that's through my store. It's the local store. It's the one I actually went to when I went first to buy the cards to play against my friend. And I got put on this team that's just a bunch of really, really good players and a bunch of players that, you know, I think I'm on like a similar skill level with them. But, you know, growing up playing with them, I always thought of them as much better than myself. And, you know, we went to this Pro Tour and I was not expecting to do that well because it was my first one. But, I prepared. I put in all this work to do well. And, you know, just to place top 16 at that and have all of them, you know, be really happy because, you know, we're in the team series too. So it really helped our team get points for the team series. It was just an incredible moment.
Man, that's so cool. So this was your first Pro Tour. You made top 16?
Yep.
That's incredible. Congrats. That's really, really cool.
Yeah, thank you.
That's really, really cool. And so, what I mean, let's kind of lead up to that then. So how did you qualify for the Pro Tour?
I top eighted Grand Prix Pittsburgh. Okay. I was playing Esper control in a field that was like 65% red black mid-range aggro Goblin Chain Whirler decks. And I just, you know, sat down the week before and kind of really figured out my matchup against that deck and then played against it like 9 times and actually ended up going undefeated in the Swiss at that Grand Prix. Got pretty lucky.
Excellent. Excellent. All right, cool. So that got you the Pro Tour invite and then off you go. And then for the Pro Tour, you get grouped with people from your local store and you guys make a team and you practice together. What did that preparation look like? What were you guys doing, talking about? Like, how did you approach preparing for this event?
Well, for me and our team, we had like one draft day at like the actual pre-release event that the store put on where we bought a box and then just kind of drafted with each other. But a lot of the people on the team have moved away from Michigan at this point. So we're kind of spread out across the country. So it was a lot of disjointed testing. Mm-hmm. So essentially my testing was mostly just on Magic Online and sometimes Skype calls with the teammates, but a lot of just playing on Magic Online.
And so what were you just testing different standard decks? Like what were you actually doing as you tested?
Well, you know, like I established before, I'm pretty dedicated control player. So I found just the best control cards out there and was just kind of monitoring the metagame and standard and kind of knew what I was going to play for a while. So a lot of it for me was draft because I come from a more constructed background. So I was spending just most of my time drafting. And then I'd say, I don't know, a week and a half, 2 weeks before the Pro Tour, something that range, I got a lot harder into constructed and started fine tuning my deck. And,
and it worked out.
It worked out.
I think that's really good. That's a great way to approach it. We've actually talked to a couple other people from Pro Tour, Guilds of Ravnica, and they said very similar things where it was, they focus a lot on limited because they figured they let the machine that is the Magic community, you know, figure out standard and they didn't really have to worry too much about that because then a week or so before the Pro Tour, they would pop their head up, see what decks are doing well. Obviously, like, you know, that white weenie popped up at the box the week before and people figured that out and stuff. And so, but they spent a lot of time on limited because, you know, they were able to, that's where they really felt that they can get the edge. So that's pretty cool that you followed a similar process and it worked out pretty well.
Yeah, I think it's starting to become an established process in the Magic Pro community, I guess, where you want to focus more on limited early and constructed late.
That's cool. Really cool. So let's see. So you ended up going with that control build that you were kind of had identified earlier on?
Yeah, I mean, for control, it's more like you identify the shell of your deck and then you tune the answers around the metagame. Okay. So I knew right away that I was going to play Teferi because he's just, in my opinion, if not the best, the second best card in standard. And we quickly realized that Niv-Mizzet Perun was also one of the best cards in standard. So I wanted to play those two cards. And then it was just a matter of determining the shell and like the answer cards that best fit those. And so that's kind of what those last 2 weeks were like. I was just like looking at the metagame, looking at how my answers kind of lined up against what I was playing against and tuning it a little bit.
Cool. Very And in your limited playtesting, whatnot, what were you looking for? Was some of the insights that you were gaining? Like, how is that going for you?
Well, so the initial, like the very, very first things that came out in limited for this specific format was that green was unplayable and blue was very good. And obviously, like, I played blue and constructed, so I was very comfortable with the blue decks initially and didn't spend very much time on that. So I spent a ton of time trying to figure out how to make the green decks work in this format. And that was a pretty difficult process because it was not obvious. They still aren't particularly great, but when you get a good one, it's very good. So you need to know how to build those decks, when to move into those situations. And I spent a lot of time trying to figure out these bad decks and then just ended up drafting two blue decks anyway. But
oh, there you go.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Cool. Yeah. So kind of going into the Pro Tour then. So tell us about your experience, like just some highlights from that first draft.
Oh man, the first draft I was actually sitting next to Pro Tour champion Andrew Ellenbogen, who
we just had him on last episode.
Really? Okay. Yep. And he actually lives like half an hour from me. He was part of my testing group, kind of. So, yeah. So it was strange because I kind of knew that like the decks he liked to draft, and I think he knew I'm very geared towards blue decks, and I ended up passing him a really, really, really busted Boros aggro deck. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think he 3-0'd our first draft pot and beat me in it. So, it worked out well for him. I'm not complaining. I ended up going 2-1. So was a good draft for me. And then, the thing that stuck out to me, like one of the most memorable things from the Pro Tour is just like every round you're playing against like a name, you know, and you know, like a Hall of Famer or just like a big name player. And it's pretty intimidating at first, but, you know, just like as you start doing it, it just becomes more and more comfortable and you kind of just start seeing yourself not being nervous anymore and being able to, you know, just treat it like a normal game of Magic. And I think it was a, you know, a big moment of growth for me too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, definitely that starstruck thing, for lack of a better word, is definitely, yeah, it's happened to me where I sat across at a Grand Prix from someone that, you know, a name that I recognize, whatever, like, oh man, and try not to get into your own head and realize that, hey, you're sitting down, you're matched up in this round because of, you know, your records are similar and you have just as much a chance as they do, you know? So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, you're still playing cards, right? So it's like, they might make the right plays, but if, you know, if you also make the right plays, then it's not going to be that big of a difference.
That's cool. And then did the constructed rounds go well for you on day one?
They kind of did. The very first round I sat down, I won game one. Game two, I am like 99% to win the game. And then I'm still like really nervous at this point. I'm kind of shaking. And I just make a really, really, really bad play in the middle of game two. And it ends up costing me the game. And then I lose game three. And it was just like this heartbreaking moment where it's like, you know, I started out 2-1. I was so happy. I have the match or the first round of constructed locked up and then I just punch it away. I was really nervous about that. I thought my Pro Tour was just going to go down the tubes right there. But, you know, managed to claw back, win some rounds, and then ended up going, I think, 10 rounds, 8-2 in constructed. So it was really – ended up being really good for me.
Yeah, wow. How did you bounce back, you know, mentally after that misstep? Huh. And be able to continue on with your Pro Tour and not letting that affect you?
Well, I would say I did something, you know, like special or whatever, but I didn't really. I just got really lucky and just had like a very, very favorable pairing the next round,
okay,
if I'm going to be honest. So, I mean, I sat down and I talked to myself, and, you know, just, you know, the internal dialogue and was just like, you know, calm down. You got this. One loss doesn't really hurt that much. You still got to get to 11-5 to qualify for the next one. Just shoot for that. But I think a decent amount of it was I did get paired against a matchup where I think I'm like 90% to win. And it was just a very easy matchup and I ended up winning. So, that kind of just calmed all my nerves.
Yeah. That self-talk. Okay. Like, hey, I got this. And then you get paired and you're like, okay, yeah, I do got this. Like,
yep.
Okay. That's cool. That's good. That's nice when the universe throws you a bone. Very cool. So you moved through and, what was your final record and your actual final placement?
I went 12-4 and I finished in 13th place.
Wow, not bad. That's really cool. And yep. What did that do for you as far as pro points and setting you up for Magic future?
That put me to silver pro, or the silver status. And Qualified me for the next two Pro Tours. I guess they're called Magic Fests now, or Mythic Qualifiers. I don't know. They just changed the whole system. So to be honest, I don't actually know a whole lot about what is happening. The change is like kind of just happened at the time of recording this. So there's still a lot of uncertainty as to what my status actually means and you know, all of that. But I do know that I'm going to the next two Mythic Championships. So hopefully we'll do well at those, I guess.
Nice. Very cool. And what did it feel like? What did it feel like to, you know, you're playing through your first Pro Tour and you make it into, you know, the top 16 and you end with a really great record. What did that feel like? What did that mean to you as a Magic player?
Man, it's hard to describe the feeling. It really is just like the culmination of years of hard work. Like, I think I started seriously playing 4 years before this happened, almost, you know, pretty close to 4 years. And, you know, I put in so much work during that time, just grinding PPTQs, grinding Grand Prix, grinding Star City events, playing on Magic Online, playing FNM. There was like a 3 year stretch during that span where I didn't miss a single FNM at my store. Hmm. And just that, I don't know, just that whole, all of that effort coming together was just incredible for the first like huge finish I had, I guess. So yeah, I don't know, just huge, huge weight off my back, huge, just rush of gratification, I guess.
Super cool. So you've obviously played a lot of Magic and sat across the table from, you know, lots of different types of players and different venues and whatnot. What would you say is the biggest mistake that you see players make?
The biggest thing I see is people getting their head out of the moment. And I have to say, I'm also guilty of this, but I see it all the time where they're just like, you know, oh, if I win this next round, it means this. And if I lose this next round, it means this. And oh my gosh, I got paired up against X player and, you know, all of that. And it's just like, you can't focus on any of that. You just need to focus on what your deck does and you need to play your game. And that's what matters. And if you keep doing that round over round, you're going to see the results. And it really is hard to focus on that because there's all this extra stuff going on. And like I said, I'm definitely guilty of it too. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm playing against, you know, Platinum Pro X and how am I ever going to beat them? But none of that matters. What matters is just like, do you know how your deck works? Can you do the right things when, you know, they ask you to respond to something or whatever? And just knowing how your deck functions, playing it, and just live in that bubble of a Magic game for that hour span you have to. And that's what matters.
Cool. I like that. That's really cool. And again, through your experience, you know, playing Magic, Magic does so much for us, I feel, as people. So has there been anything that you have learned from Magic that you've been able to apply to other areas of your life?
Yeah, I mean, well, I guess I kind of have two things on this. So the first is like just, I don't know, I guess people call it like playing to your outs, mm-hmm. where you make a play that looks like a losing play, but it's like, it's the best play you have to win. And it's never something I had considered in real life at, like, situations, but you know, sometimes you just have to throw up like the Hail Mary when you're doing real life things. Like, you know, maybe compared to like asking out a girl, you're like, well, you know, maybe she won't go out with me or whatever. But like, if you don't ask, like, you're never gonna have a shot. Right. So, you know, there are things like that. And then, the other thing is just learning about the Magic community and just making friends is just, you know, it's awesome, but it also just like, it applies to real life where it's like you make these friends here and you talk to them, and you get to spend all this time enjoying, you know, stuff with them. But then at the same time, like these are the, like, you know, the friends that are going to be at your wedding and, you know, you're going to, you know, hang out with in your spare time and not when you're not doing Magic stuff. And, you know, that's something I would strongly encourage anybody listening to is just like, remember the people you're playing with, you know, they can be your best friends and they can mean a lot to the rest of your life.
Awesome. Yeah. That connection, the people element of Magic is huge. And I love that. Absolutely love that about it. How, you know, you can move to a new city or whatever. And, you know, when you go to your game store and start plugging into the Magic community and start playing, then you can, you know, quickly pick up a group of friends that you can then do stuff with, you know, in and outside of Magic. And so then, like you said, those relationships as you within Magic, as you play tests and travel and have friends that you can talk to and, you know, split, you know, rides and fares with or whatever, but then also involve in other, you know, life activities as well. So I think it's really cool, the human element. And then obviously, like you said, the making the best decision at the time, you know, sets you up for a win later, you know, and with the information you have right now and you make the best decision, and you know that that definitely applies to, again, relationships or work or whatever. So I think those are really, really cool insights that you've taken out from the game. So that's pretty cool. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you.
So you're on this, you know, we've kind of gone through your early days and your ups and downs and your big event. And what's next for you? Obviously, you said you're invited to the next two events, the big ones, you know, Mythic or Pro Tour, whatever they're calling it these days. But
Mythic Championships now, I think.
Where else can we see you? Like, what else is in your Magic futures? Do you have any other Grand Prix lined up or Star City events? Like,
well, I'm from the Midwest, so the Midwest gets, I don't know, two or three Grand Prix a year, so it's not that many. And I don't like to travel super far to events. I mean, I will for bigger ones, but, you know, there's so many events that if you just travel, like, long distance all the time, it's just a huge grind, and it just really wears on you. So I like to kind of keep it more local when I can. And for me, that just means there's a lot more Star Cities locally than Grand Prix. So I mean, you'll see me more in Star City events just because there are just more available. But, you know, I'll play any Grand Prix that's in, you know, reasonable distance. And I'm kind of known for just grinding as many events as I can. So, yeah. You know, you'll see me at anyone that's probably within a 10-hour drive of the Midwest.
What would you say is your best format?
Probably Standard. Yeah. Although I really do like Legacy and Modern. I like all of them. But Standard is just where I put up my best results. It's just... it's the one where control's the best, I think. So cool. I see the best results there.
Very cool. And are there any non-magic activities or habits that you have that you feel contributes to your success as a magic player?
Yeah. So I played football in high school, and I played for a program that had a lot of tradition. And one of the things they taught you is that, like, even if you have this tradition, even if you have, you know, all these trophies on, you know, the high school's trophy case or whatever, none of that matters to you because, you know, it's your own story. You're starting your own thing here now, and you have to make the most of it. And they really taught you to work really, really hard, which, you know, I'm grateful for, because I really carried over to Magic. And that's kind of how I got to where I am, is that, you know, I'm willing to put in hours and work really, really hard to get better. Whereas I don't think everybody is necessarily. And I think that's why I've seen so much growth.
Put in the work. Don't be afraid to roll up your sleeves and do the work if you want to get the results that that you might see other people get, you know? So,
yep.
Yeah, really cool. And what about books? Read any good books lately, or any books that have shifted your approach to Magic or games?
I have not read any books lately. I've been more on a digital media train, I guess. But I was a huge reader, you know, through college. Nothing off the top of my head, but I was always a big fan of fiction books. So
cool. Oh, yeah, me too. So on the digital media side, where do you turn for when you're keeping your finger on the pulse of Magic? What resources do you go to that you can recommend to us that we can maybe link in the show notes?
Well, I mean, I'll look at anything I can find that's available to me. I'll watch Channel Fireball videos. I'll read their articles. I'll look at Star City Games, check out their articles. Cool Stuff Inc. does articles. I watch YouTube videos from, you know, big time streamers, whatever, watch Twitch streams, kind of anything, any kind of content I can that's relevant to, you know, whatever deck choice I'm on for the next event. So, you know, if somebody's playing, a control deck on Twitch, I'll check them out and see what they're doing with their control deck, see if they got any ideas that are different than mine, and, you know, read some articles on just, you know, any deck people are playing, honestly, for articles, because as a control player, you kind of got to know the whole format to know what you're trying to control. So, I think it's really important for me to just consume, like, as many articles as I possibly can, which just kind of means look for all of them, I guess.
Look for all the articles. Very cool. Neat. And when, you know, when you travel with you, what do you take with you? What's actually in your tournament bag?
I got a playmat. My decks. What?
Which one?
I have one from my store that I got signed by Pat Chapin, who's, you know, like a personal hero of mine, I guess.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, yeah.
I had him sign it like right when I started, like 4 years ago. I've played with the same playmat ever since.
Good for you. Cool.
So that life pad, a water bottle. I got the same backpack that I've had since college, just all in there. And then, you know, just the normal stuff you travel with, toiletries, clothes, change of shoes, whatever.
Cool. Very cool. Love it. Now, what advice would you have for newer players? Let's say there's, you know, they're new to Magic. They know the rules and whatnot, but they're just kind of starting to get into this, you know, competitive scene and taking Magic seriously. And stumble across the podcast and listen to your episode. What advice do we have to new competitive Magic players?
You know, my thing to new players is just find something you love about the game and do that, because there is a lot of hard moments when you're trying to grind, and it's definitely difficult, and it can be frustrating. It can be a downing experience, but if you're playing like a deck you love or an archetype you love and you're really enjoying the games, then it's all worth it. And that was how I got to where I was, you know, there was a bunch of losses. There were, you know, tournaments I didn't do as well as I wanted, but I just really enjoyed the experience of playing Control personally. And I just did that every time I could. And, you know, I never regretted the games I played. It was always fun. I always felt like even if I didn't do as well as, you know, even if I didn't do as well as I would have liked, then the games I actually got to play on the weekend were fun and they were gratifying to actually play. And so it really did feel like, you know, like the vacation I kind of wanted to be. So
very cool. Oh, I love it. And I want to remind Prodigy out there, you want to connect with Zach, you find him on Twitter at A22EN. And you can connect with him there and say thanks for being on the show, ask him a question, but that's where you can find him. And then you're also on Twitch as well, Zach. So you can look him up there, or, you know, probably follow him on Twitter and he'll let you know when he's streaming, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Zach, as we kind of close things up, what's a parting piece of guidance you have for us? Either something that you've already said that you want to emphasize, or something new you would like to leave with us here at the end?
I think I've already touched on this, but to me, the most important thing about Magic is the people and the friends you make along the way, and all the other stuff is just part of the journey. And the thing that, you know, sticks with you or gets you into Magic, probably, it's different for everybody, right? But, and then the thing that you'll have after you're done playing are the friends you made. And I think that's really important and something to focus on. And, you know, even for me, you know, an aspiring Pro Tour player, that's the thing I remember the most. And that's the best part about the trips is, for me, I always say it's my favorite part about any Magic trip is the car ride there, where you get to just enjoy it with your friends. So I would say to newer players and anybody listening, just, you know, make the most of your time with your friends here and make new friends along the way and really get to enjoy the people you get to spend time with.
Love it. Oh man, Zach, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse, and thank you so much for your time, for sharing your experiences and your expertise with us. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed, always draw what you need, and depart every plane victorious.
Thanks, Sean.
And there you have it, episode 317, all wrapped up. Thank you, Zach Allen, for being our guest. Prodigies, you can find the show notes at mtgpro2.com/Zach Allen. And yeah, that's it. Like, next week is New Year's, so I definitely hope that you have a fun New Year's plan, but that you do it safely. Of course, we want you to have a good time, but, you know, be safe about it. Because I definitely look forward to connecting again with you next week when we have another episode coming out. And yeah, again, thank you so much for being part of this journey. Absolutely love, you know, this time of year we get to be with family and friends. I know that my family has been in town. It's been fun to be with them, and we get to reflect on the year and all that we've done and where we're going next. And it's just been, you know, MTG Pro Tutor has been an awesome ride, and I'm so grateful that you have been a part of it. So thank you for tuning in. Thanks for listening all the way here to the end of the episode, and I definitely look forward to connecting again with you. Until then, I'm Sean of the Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery, be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.